be doing in here that could...
I'd like to bring to order the House Committee on Consumer Protection, Government Efficiency, Tuesday, April 16th. We're going to start out, committee, by opening a work session, House Bill 2429. And Bob, remind us what this bill does and what amendment we're looking at.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 2429 is a measure that requires public bodies to remove personal information from electronic devices before disposing of those devices. It requires public bodies to own, lease, or otherwise control the devices that they use, and requires businesses offering photocopiers or scanners for use by the public for a fee to post notice that information from documents may be stored on the device. There is a -4 amendment to the measure, which I believe Representative Gelser is here to speak to, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Gelser. Good afternoon. Welcome. And if you could briefly tell us what the -4 amendment does.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For your record, I'm Sarah Gelser, State Representative from Corvallis and Philomath, which is House District 16. The amendment, you heard this bill a long time ago in February, and this amendment responds to the questions that were raised there. It responds to the concerns of the city in Portland and DAS by clarifying which information is included to be health information and personal information. It aligns with the identity theft statute as per this amendment. Also, in response to a request from DAS, it allows public entities to contract out the actual removal of personal information. So it doesn't have to be an employee of DAS that gets that done. In response to the concern raised by the Oregon Sheriff's Association, it allows public entities to use copiers or scanners owned by any public entity or the federal government, allowing city police to copy paperwork at a county sheriff's office or vice versa, as well as the FBI. In response to the League of Oregon Cities and DOJ's questions, the amendment continues to allow for large copying and scanning jobs to be contracted out, provided that the service used is pursuant to a written contract in which there are provisions that require the scanning or copying service to maintain confidentiality, and that this is the most cost-effective means of copying or scanning those documents. And finally, it responds to a question raised by the City of Portland, and it makes sure that we aren't compelling employees to do anything. It keeps the focus of this on what is in the control and ownership of the public entity. And I'd like to thank Erica Hendricks, who did all of the work on this bill.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Representative Thatcher.
Just one question. There's been concern raised to me that perhaps this is putting an extra burden on public agencies. And how would you respond to that?
Chair Holvey, Representative Thatcher, the only additional burden that this would provide to public agencies is to ensure that information is wiped. We've responded to every concern that's been raised by a public entity to make sure that it is not overly burdensome. And then finally, I think the burden on the public of not being sure what's happening to their personal information is resolved by the bill, and that's why I urge its passage.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative, for what you're doing here. Just to confirm, you're suggesting in the amendments that the public body could, if they found it would be more efficient for them or cost-effective, to contract out these services so that they wouldn't have to use personnel that they may not have the knowledge or the skills to do this. Is that correct?
Chair Holvey, Representative Johnson, yes. For example, the Department of Justice, when they are doing discovery, there will be quantities, thousands of pages of information, and this allows them to continue to do that. And we worked with the Department of Justice to ensure that the language was sufficient to allow that, not just for DOJ, but any public agency.
Great. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I have one additional question.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. When I was looking at the -4s, I was kind of struck with the thought that perhaps an agency would not be able to just walk into a Kinko's and use it unless there was already set up ahead of time some sort of agreement on destruction of personal data. Is that true?
Chair Holvey, Representative Thatcher, that only applies if it's information that you're photocopying that has that personal information or health information.
And that is identified, defined.
And that's defined here. But if you were making a flyer to publicize an event, there's nothing that keeps you from going to Kinko's.
Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you, Representative. I appreciate your time today. Committee, we don't have the paperwork to move this bill, but I'd like to go ahead and adopt the Dash 4 amendments. Representative Lively?
Chair Hovey, I move we adopt the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2429, dated 4-4-2013.
Representative Lively moves to adopt the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2429, dated 4-4-2013. Discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, is there objection to adopting the amendment? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted. And we will close the work session on House Bill 2429 and open a work session on House Bill 3165. Bob, give us a brief review of this bill, please. Oh, excuse me. We're going to open a public, close a work session on House Bill 3165 and open a public hearing.
It's okay.
On House Bill 3165. give us a brief description of the bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3165 specifies the type of exceptions that the Director of Department of Administrative Services may grant from staffing restrictions related to the 11-to-1 supervisory ratio. It requires the Director to notify bargaining agent of employees in the appropriate bargaining unit for an agency requesting an exception, repeals the requirement for the Department to develop a plan for state agencies to attain the 11-to-1 supervisory ratio, and declares an emergency and is effective on passage. I will also note, Mr. Chair, that the committee has, in OLIS, proposed Dash 1 amendments to this measure.
Okay, thank you. And before we get started, I'd like to just make an announcement. We will be carrying over House Bill 3447. We'll be carrying over House Bill 3145. We'll be carrying over House Bill 3349. We'll be carrying over House Bill 3389. And we'll be carrying over House Bill 2826, and we'll be carrying over House Bill 2536. Oh, and one more. We'll be carrying over House Bill 2662. Gee, I only lost one person out of that.
Have a good afternoon.
Oh, maybe two. So... excuse the interruption, Representative Dembro. I forgot to announce that to start with. But we are, I did open a public hearing on House Bill 3165. Representative Dembro.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, I'm Michael Dembro. I represent House District 45, that's Northeast Portland to Park Rose. And I bring you House Bill 3165, which creates. It's intended to solve a problem that surfaced after a bill that we passed in 2012 was shown to have some problems. And I can't remember the number of that bill. It wasn't 4141, but it was something like that. It was the bill that set the 11-to-1.
The 11-to-1 bill.
Yeah, it was the 11-to-1 bill. That's how we think of it. It put into practice the goal of state agencies maintaining staff-to-employee ratios of 11-to-1. And in that bill, our intention was that the director of the Department of Administrative Services would have some wiggle room for certain circumstances that required exceptions to be made, namely those there are some agencies that are involved directly with issues of safety where there might be a need for a smaller ratio. People who are doing child protective services work, for example, there was arguably a need for a smaller ratio than that. We talked at the time about state police who have field offices out in remote geographical areas that are going to need smaller ratios. It was our intention that the bill would allow that discretion to the director, but after the passage of the bill, we learned from the Department of Justice that, they disagreed. And so just to clarify these exceptions, we needed to have drafted House Bill 3165, which is before you. And what it does is it spells out on page 2 of the bill that It again gives the department director discretion, says that if the department determines that the exception is warranted due to unique or emergency circumstances, the director may grant an exception that applies to a particular position if the director determines the exception is necessary to allow the state agency to maintain public or state agency employee safety, or applies to a division, unit, office, branch, or other smaller part of the state agency if the director determines the exception is necessary to allow the state agency to maintain public or state agency employees' safety, or because of the geographic location of the division, unit, office, branch, or other smaller part of the state agency. So it spells out those exceptions. And so DHS as a whole might have the 11-to-the goal is that they would have the 11-to-1 ratio. But a unit within DAS, for example, Child Protective Services, could have a smaller ratio. We did add one thing to the bill, and that was that's in number 5 here, which follows. And what that does is it says that after the director has decided that an exception is in order, he or she will notify the bargaining unit, which can then object or not. And if the bargaining unit objects and the director feels, despite the information that the bargaining unit representative presents, still feels this is an appropriate exception, the exception goes forward. But it does, it allows the bargaining unit to have to give input before the fact rather than after the fact. You know, when they have to do it after the fact, it can be kind of messy to reverse a decision that was already made. And so we discussed with the DAS director, and 5 days seemed to be the appropriate amount of notice that they would need. So that is basically it. There is a dash one amendment that simply I read to you the language. If the department determines that the exception is warranted due to unique or emergency circumstances, that was bracketed in the original bill. The agency felt that they would like that language to remain in there, even though we go on to specify what the circumstances of the exception are. They felt it would be clearer if that were in there, and so the dash one amendment restores that language. So that, in a nutshell, is what it is. It's a simple bill. You know, again, the goal of this bill is to try to find an appropriate ratio to, you know, we needed it last session, frankly, to help with to bring down costs of state government. The 11-to-1 ratio is one that generally people agree this is a good workable ratio for the state, a good goal to shoot for. But at the same time, exceptions may be warranted, but we don't want to just open the barn door to all exceptions. You know, we want to really clarify where exceptions can occur. So, you know, you need to find that balance. And, I believe that House Bill 3165, as amended, does that. Be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from the committee? Representative Richardson.
Question on the dash one, because it appears to me that it does not do what you just said at the very end there, because it says, if the director determines that the exception is warranted due to unique, undefined, or emergency circumstances, the director may grant exception under this section. So if that's just giving complete discretionary authority to a director to say this is a unique circumstance and so we're not going to do it and this is, then has that not essentially gutted the intent of the bill?
Mm-hmm. I believe that what it does is it says the director may grant an exception that meets these requirements. So these requirements that follow are the unique and emergency circumstances that the bill talks about.
Okay.
So this limits the type of circumstances.
Continuation of that sentence.
Right.
Thank you. I appreciate you bringing this bill back to us and reminding us about where this came from and describing the Dash 1 amendments.
And Rep. Hovey, if I could just add, you know, I saw a report on a sort of progress report on how DAS is implementing this 11-to-1, and we've made a lot of progress in this area. And probably it would be useful, I think, and I'll try to get that out to all the members. I think you'll appreciate seeing just how this 11-to-1, you know, the movement towards 11-to-1 is working, and we seem to be making state government more efficient.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3165. No one else has signed up to speak on it. And another note to the crowd, we are not hearing House Bill 3485. And we will be carrying over 3169 as well.
We're not hearing it today, or not hearing it permanently?
Just today.
Just today. 3165.
I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3165 for the purposes of adopting the Dash 1 amendment. Can you just describe to us?
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 3165, dated 4-16-2013.
Representative Lively moves we adopt the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 3165, dated 4-16-2013. Any discussion on the amendment? Any opposition to the amendment? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted. I'll close the work session on House Bill 3165. And we'll go open up a work session on House Bill 3172. Again, committee, we're just adopting the amendment on this bill. And Bob, give us a brief description of the bill.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 3172 is the measure that requires evaluation of septic systems of residential real property and a report of the evaluation to a buyer. The committee has available, has before it a proposed Dash 3 amendment which replaces the measure, and I believe we have individuals here to speak to the Dash 3 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So the individuals that would like to speak to the Dash 3 amendment on House Bill 3172. So good afternoon. If you could identify yourself for the record and tell us briefly what the Dash 3 amendment does.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Sean Jillians representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. Thank you for entertaining the Dash 3 amendments. Primarily what they do is bolster the statutory seller's property disclosure. As you know, Mr. Chair, we've been in discussions with DEQ about how we might enhance our current program around septic systems, particularly at the point of sale, and then also educating rural homeowners. I think this is the first step in our association working with DEQ to do that. The Dash 3 amendments, as you'll see, ask a little more significant questions about septic when someone conveys their property, also requires a little more to be included going to the buyer. I think they're a positive step, and it kept the seller's property disclosure under 17 pages, Mr. Chair, and that was always important to us as well.
Thank you. I know 17 is a good number.
So, Chair Hovey, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Palmer Mason. I'm the Government Relations Manager for DEQ. I want to echo what Sean said. We're working with the realtors to develop a voluntary education outreach program for buyers and sellers so the buyers are more informed when they go to purchase property about the condition of their septic tank and the location of all the components of the septic tank. And I want to commend the realtors for stepping forward and helping us to work with that. So I'm just going to stop there and savor the moment of where DEQ and the realtors are working together. So.
Yeah, maybe we should all have a moment of silence.
Yeah.
So any other, are there any questions of anyone on the Dash 3 amendments? I'm not seeing it. Thanks a lot for working together to get this. I know this is an important program for DEQ and trying to meet its federal requirements, so thank you to the realtors as well. Representative Lively, could we have a motion on the Dash 3 amendments?
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 3172, dated 4/15/2013.
Representative Lively moves we adopt the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 3172, dated 4/15/2013. Discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, is there objection to adopting the amendment? Seeing none, Dash 3 amendments adopted. House Bill 3172, I'll close the work session on House Bill 3172. And open a work session on House Bill 3400. Bob, give us a brief description of House Bill 3400, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3400 is the measure that requires the governor's biennial budget report to include each state agency's percentages of expenditures made inside and outside of the state under all contracts for goods or services entered into in the previous biennium. The committee has before it a proposed Dash 1 amendment, which replaces the measure and would require the Oregon Transparency website to include each state agency's percentages of expenditures made inside and outside of the state under all contracts for goods or services entered into each biennium.
Thank you. I'm not sure if Mr. Pack is able to speak to us on House Bill 3400 on the Dash 1 amendment. Does that ring a bell? I know you probably weren't intending to, but I don't see Representative Clem here to carry the description of this.
Mr. Chair, I think I, for the record, Barry Pack with the Department of Administrative Services. I think I chose the wrong moment to return to the committee. if you will give me 1 second to pull up the Dash 1, I will attempt to address it.
Bob, why don't you go ahead and help Mr. Pack out?
I was going to note, Mr. Chair, that we have statements of no revenue impact and minimal fiscal impact for this measure with that Dash 1 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I apologize, but the Dash 1 does not appear to be in OLIS, so I'm going to be...
Thank you.
Okay.
Yes. Well, sure, glad you show up once in a while.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Dash 1 amendments reflect, as I quickly glance at them, conversations we'd had with Representative Clem, that perhaps the governor's balanced budget was not the best place to be reporting this information. It's really a statement of where the governor's going with the policy on the state, and that it would be more available, more widely available, if we posted it on the transparency website. And so that, you know, eliminates, it prevents any sort of printing costs or additional reporting having to be generated, and we'll just post it or a link to it on the transparency website.
Thank you.
And if it does more than that, I haven't had enough time to look at it, and I apologize in advance for that.
That's, I think that's all it does. So, no particular questions popping out at us. I appreciate you coming forward with the Dash 1 amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there any other questions, committee, on this bill? I apologize for not having Representative Clem here to talk about it. Let's have a motion.
Sure. Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3400, dated 4/9/2013.
Representative Lively moves Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3400, dated 4/9/13. Is there discussion on the amendment? Is there objection to adopting the amendment? Seeing none, the amendment's adopted. And I believe we have the paperwork, so this one's ready to go to the floor.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3400 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Lively moves House Bill 3400 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none. Samantha, can we have a vote, please?
Representative Vega-Peterson?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Kinney-Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lively?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. House Bill 3400, having received the votes, is passed to the floor. Is there any? Did we? We could have Representative Clem carry this or put it on the consent calendar. We'll put it on. We'll give it to Representative Clem to carry. We'll close work session, House Bill 3400. Open up a work session, House Bill 3013. Bob, give us a brief description of House Bill 3013, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3013 is the measure that excludes certain appraisals from public records disclosure exemption covering records submitted to a housing authority or urban renewal agency by applicants for loans, grants, and tax credits. We have no amendments before the committee on this measure. There is no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact on the measure as introduced, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Lavlick, we have a motion on House Bill 3013.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3013 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Lavlick moves House Bill 3013 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the bill? Seeing none. Can we have a vote, Samantha?
Representative Megan Peterson?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative
Kenny
Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lively?
Aye.
Chair Holke?
Aye. House Bill 3013 is passed to the floor. And we'll have Representative Esquivel carry this bill on the floor. That'll close work session on House Bill 3013.
Open a work session on House Bill 3174. Bob, give us a brief description of House Bill 3174.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3174 is the measure that allows a resident to claim bankruptcy exemption specified in the Federal Bankruptcy Code. The measure has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact as introduced, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Lively, could I have a motion on House Bill 3174?
Certainly. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3174 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Lively moves House Bill 3174 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
I just have a question.
Question.
So with this bill, the person chooses either the federal path or the state path, and there's not a combination of both.
That is correct. And I believe in OLIS we do have two legal opinions that state that on this bill.
Thank you.
Other questions? Seeing none.
Can I just make a mention? One of the handouts that we received, Mr. Chair, actually laid these out side by side. And the wild card provision is the one that is the most. It basically gives an authority to use certain amounts for either as a general exclusion or exemption, and it's $400 in the Oregon side, and it's almost 11,000 if we have an unused homestead in the federal side. And so by making this choice, what it basically does is we allow the person who's going bankrupt to decide, do I want the better homestead that's an exemption on the Oregon side than the federal, or the bigger wild card exclusion on the other, and just allows that kind of decision to be made by the person going bankrupt. It's not in the best interest of the creditor, because of what it's doing to the creditor is saying that heads I win, tails you lose. Whichever is going to be best, to allow greater exemptions for the bankruptee, will be against the best interest of the creditor.
Thank you. I'm not sure I disagree with you. I think that Oregon does offer a higher homestead exemption, but for those that have no equity in their home or don't own a home, it allows them to use a portion of the federal homestead exemption in that wild card, but it's substantially less than the homestead exemption itself. So, but I think that's an accurate description.
Any other discussion on the bill? Seeing none, Ms. Samantha, can we have a vote?
Representative Vega Peterson?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
No.
Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson?
No.
Vice Chair Lively?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. House Bill 3174, having received the votes, is passed to the floor. And we'll have Representative Williamson carry this bill. She expressed some interest in this. And I skipped over one here. Open up a works, or did I close the work session on House Bill 3174, just in case I didn't? Open a work session on House Bill 3415. Bob, give us a brief description of House Bill 3415.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3415 requires public body acting as a radio common carrier by providing access to radio tower for delivery of radio communication service, radio paging, or cellular communication service to charge market rate for access. The measure defines market rate. The committee has a proposed dash one amendment that specifies that a public body or private nonprofit emergency services organization need not be charged market rate for access. That amendment was discussed at our public hearing on the 9th of April. At this time, Mr. Chair, we have statements of no revenue impact, but we don't have a fiscal impact statement for this measure.
Thank you. And committee, it's just my intent to adopt the dash one amendment. Here's Representative Lively, a motion on the dash one amendment.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the dash one amendment to House Bill 3415, dated 4-9-2013.
Representative Lively moves the adoption of the Dash 1 Amendment to House Bill 3415, dated 4-9-13. Discussion on the amendment. Thatcher.
In a sentence, I'm sitting here trying to catch up with my technology. Maybe other people are in the same boat, but real quick, what was the amendment again?
It was the ODOT Amendment, I believe.
ODOT Amendment,
Mr. Honeycutt, would you like to come up and we'd have ODOT and explain it, but I think Mr. Honeycutt's a proponent of the bill. I shouldn't call it the ODOT amendment. It was a good idea that was stolen, I think.
Chair Holby, members of the committee, Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action. The purpose of the Dash 1 amendments is to make it clear that the market rate charged by a public body on for a radio tower does not apply to other public bodies. So if you're leasing space to other public bodies or private nonprofit emergency services organizations, the public body that owns the tower is not required to charge the market rate. And that was necessary to ensure that ODOT and the Oregon and OFIC and the Department of Forestry were on board with the bill. So with that, I don't think there's any opposition to the bill with the Dash 1 amendments in it.
Yes, thank you. And I did have a discussion with the counties as well, and they didn't seem to have any opposition to this bill either. Thank you, Mr. Honeycutt. Question?
One question. This wasn't discussed under the bill, and maybe it should be discussed after we adopt the amendment, but what happens to those people who are now commercial people and they're renting space on it? Are they suddenly going to get a big rate hike? Or are they grandfathered in? What's the intent there?
Chair Holby, Representative Thatcher, nothing will happen to the private businesses leasing space. When their lease expires, if they're leasing off from a public tower, they'll be required. The public tower will be required, or the public body will be required to charge them a market rate.
Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you bringing this issue forward.
I think it does
need to be addressed. So we have a motion on the amendment, and there's no objection to adopting the amendment. So amendment's adopted, and we will close the work session on House Bill 3415. And we're going to skip down the agenda and open a work session on House Bill 2828. Bob, give us a brief description of House Bill 2828. and the amendment we're looking at.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2828, a measure that requires the Department of State Police to establish a fingerprint retention program, requires the department to notify a subscribed agency or district if the department receives information relating to the administration of criminal justice regarding an individual on whom department conducted a criminal records check for a subscriber. The committee has before it a dash 3 amendment, which replaces the measure, and I believe we have Representative Nathanson here to speak to that dash 3 amendment. I should note, Mr. Chair, that with the dash 3 amendment, the measure has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact. The measure does have a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I'm Nancy Nathanson, representative from House District 13, and I've brought a couple other people to the table with me in case you have questions that I'm not able to answer. Wrapback is not new. It's used in over a dozen other states in the United States. But what we've discovered in working with this bill is we need a little more time to further clarify how the processes will actually work, what we need to do to put it in place in the most careful and appropriate way for the state of Oregon. This is a national background check program that works in other places. In talking with people, I'm still getting a lot of information from people who say that the most important thing is to ensure public safety, to ensure the safety of clients, in some cases to ensure the safety of other workers that you're working in the same facility with. So I think it's worthy of continued discussion so that we can clarify all the processes and bring back the bill with any additional language or changes in language that need to be. So I hope that you will consider adopting the Dash 3 amendment and then adopting the bill as amended. The Dash 3 amendment, in brief, says that the state police shall establish a work group and it prescribes who will participate. Generally, it's the people who participated in the work group to bring this recommendation to you. It's a very large group of people that includes state agencies as well as people in the private sector. It says that they shall report to the appropriate interim committee by November 1st and a few other details. But that's basically what it does. Sets up a work group. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And Representative Nathanson, a quick question for you. This bill does have a subsequent to Ways and Means, even though it has a minimal fiscal. I would assume that it's because they need to recognize these participants in the work group.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I assume it's because the burden will fall on the state police to call a few meetings.
Okay, thank you. Questions on the amended work group bill? Oh, we have to take the motion first. Representative Lively.
So I move that we adopt the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2828, dated 4-11-2013.
Representative Lively moves we adopt the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2828, dated 4-11-2013. Now, questions or discussions about the amendment? Not seeing any. Representative Nathanson, I think we all understand the importance of this, and thank you for all your work on this, and good luck to the work group. Let us know if we can be of assistance. So, is there any objection to adopting the amendment? Seeing none, the amendment's adopted. Representative Lively, this one has a subsequent to Ways and Means.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2828 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Lively moves House Bill 2828 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Discussion on the motion? Seeing none. Oh, Representative Thatcher.
Just laying it out there. Something about this just feels like we're just kind of putting off what was attempting to be done in the first place. Sort of kicking kicking the can down the road, so to speak, to kind of end at the same place that was originally proposed. And for some reason, I have an uneasy feeling about this. Just laying that out there. So.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the discussion warrants further discussion. It needs to keep happening. And, you know, because I think there is, you know, some great potential cost savings to the state if we can figure out how to make this work for the state of Oregon. So that's, I think that's worth the further discussion on the discussion. So thank you very much. Samantha, can we have a vote, please?
Representative Vega Peterson?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
No.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Penny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lively?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. House Bill 2828 is passed and on to the House Ways and Means Committee. And I'll close work session on House Bill 2828. I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 3360. Bob, give us a brief description of House Bill 3360.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 3360 is the measure that, with the Dash 3 amendments that the committee adopted on April 11th, establishes an Office of Shared Information Technology Services in the Department of Administrative Services to provide direction, advice, and direct assistance to state agencies, requires agencies to submit technology plans to that office, requires the office to approve the plans meeting the office's standards for efficiency and cost effectiveness, sets staffing criteria, and becomes operative on July 1st, 2014. The measure requires the department to submit a budget plan for the office to the 2014 Legislative Assembly and declares an emergency and is effective on passage. The committee has statements of no revenue impact and minimal fiscal impact for the measure as amended, and the measure does have a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means, Mr. Chair.
So have we adopted the Dash 3s?
We did adopt that amendment in our last meeting. Yes.
Okay, thank you. Representative Lively, a motion on the Dash 3?
Certainly. On the bill?
Or on the amended bill. Okay. Correct.
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 3360 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Lively moves House Bill 3360 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Discussion on the motion. On the bill. I think it's a great bill. Appreciate all your work on it, Representative Peterson. So with that, could I have a vote?
Representative Vega Peterson?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Penny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lively?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. House Bill 3360 is passed to the Committee on Ways and Means, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 3360. I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 3159. Bob, give us a brief description of House Bill 3159.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 3159, including Dash 7 amendments that the committee adopted in our April 11th meeting, limits the charge for towing of a motor vehicle without prior consent or authorization of owner or operator to amounts set by counties and cities with a population of 15,000 or more. The measure requires counties and cities to establish maximum rates for towing and related services and to establish a process for receiving and responding to complaints, requires a tower to maintain a license from a county or city, authorizes a county or city to issue licenses and collect fees from applicants, and becomes operative on January 1st, 2014. The measure does declare an emergency and is effective on passage. The committee has statements of no revenue impact and minimal fiscal impact for the measure as amended, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Lively, a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3159 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Lively moves House Bill 3159 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
One comment. I think this bill is fine, it should go through, but it also just shows how inappropriate the use of an emergency clause is, because this thing's not going to go into effect until the first of next year, but it's got an emergency clause when there's no emergency on this at all. And I think that just we have a responsibility not to invoke that, although the chances of there being a referendum on this bill are pretty slim. Still, the emergency clause does prevent the citizens from responding to a bill. We ought to be careful when we use that clause.
Mm-hmm. I can appreciate that, and it is something that gets added to a lot of bills. When people feel like they need a change in the existing world quickly to prevent situations that are happening sooner rather than later. Well noted. Mr. Elkins, would you like to comment on this bill before we move it on? I know that you had lots of discussions on this bill 3159, the towing bill. Yes. With the Dash 7 amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Al Elkins with the Oregon Tow Truck Association. Yes, I just wanted the committee to know how much I appreciate your patience with working with us, and we will continue to work on the definition of non-consent towing on the Senate side. So that's just for the record, I wanted to say that. But again, thank you in particular, Mr. Chair, for your patience. Yeah.
So conceptually, you think this is a good bill and will help the industry?
Yes, sir. We'll work with it on the Senate side.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Further discussion on the bill? And we have a motion on the floor. And no questions, Samantha. Can we have a vote?
Representative Vega Peterson?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lively?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. House Bill 3159, having received required votes, is passed to the floor. And do we have a volunteer to carry this bill on the floor?
Hello.
Representative Lively, thank you. I'd like to close the work session on House Bill 3159. And let's open a public hearing on House Bill 3489. Bob, give us a brief description of House Bill 3489.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3489 allows the Real Estate Commissioner to suspend, revoke, or deny escrow agent licensure if a person acts as a collection agency or provides debt management service or money transmission without a required license. Allows the commissioner to suspend, revoke, or deny a licensure if a person assists another person without a license to act as a collection agency or provide debt management service or money transmission. The measure limits an escrow agent exemption from licensure requirement for debt management service provider and becomes operative 60 days after the effective date. The measure includes an emergency clause. The committee does not have amendments before it at this time. We do have statements of no revenue impact and minimal fiscal impact for the measure as introduced, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. If I could have David Tapman and Jessica Adamson up. Good afternoon. If you could identify yourself for the record and tell us what the purpose of this bill is.
Mr. Chair, thank you so much. I'm David Tapman. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm David Tapman, the Administrator for the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities, part of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. We sent over electronic copies of testimony. We couldn't tell from OLIS whether it was received or not, so has the committee received it?
We have.
I will not bother you with paper. So as the committee can tell from the number of the bill, this is a late entry into the session. I want to give thanks to Representative Holby for sponsoring this bill. This is to address an issue that has popped up involving the provision of debt management services. And that debt management services is something in which consumers who are underwater financially, either due to credit card debt or perhaps due to their mortgage being upside down, will be solicited to have services provided to them by various companies. Back in 2009, when the economy really hit bottom, we were seeing a lot of activity in this area where companies were proposing to provide services to people who needed help because they had fallen behind on credit card payments in particular or on their mortgages. There was a very aggressive advertising campaign put on by these companies, and this committee back in 2009 adopted laws to address this problem and created a new regime. The law had not kept up with the changes in debt management and debt consumer debt services being provided by various entities. And so with the change in the law, we came up with some new areas to address what has been the most problematic area, and that's debt management service providers. And those are these companies that you still see advertising on television and alike that provide services or allegedly provide services to people, in most instances, who are behind on credit card debts. And what they will do is they'll enter into a contract with a consumer, and under the terms of the contract, the consumer will set money aside, either held by the debt management service provider or by a third party, and that money will be accumulated until such time as the debt service management company thinks they've got sufficient money in hand to go and negotiate a settlement, so hence the debt management settlement name. Unfortunately, all too often, these companies instruct their consumers not to contact their creditors, to ignore any calls or contact from their creditors, not to explain the plan they're in. And because of the size of their debt, all too often, the amount of money that has to be accumulated takes months, if not in some instances years, to reach a sufficient sum. In the meantime, the creditors have lost patience. They've taken action legally. They've obtained judgments. The judges either go against the creditors or they have to go into bankruptcy to try and discharge. In addition, and maybe most galling, is the fact that these companies are charging fees that range from ridiculous to outrageous. We see fees anywhere from $1,500 to $10,000. For people who are underwater, say, $5,000 to $20,000 on credit cards, so they've added this additional problem to them. And most of the time, the money that they've accumulated is insufficient, or the creditor has already acted, and so the purpose behind this program that the consumer has entered into is dissipated, and yet the money is not refunded. So that was the basis for this action in 2009. The law has had great success, and I tip my hat to the legislature for doing this. Just since 2009, the department has been able to obtain refunds of over $260,000 on behalf of consumers. And these are dealing with unregistered companies. The vast majority of companies are unregistered and out of state. If we can contact them, if we can get hold of them, in many instances, they're willing to do the right thing. It's been our determination that probably about one quarter to one third of the time, if we get a complaint and we can find the company still in existence, which isn't always the case, we can get some form of recovery. However, the problem still looms large. As we know, the economy still hasn't turned around, and because of that, we still see consumers being defrauded in this situation. Now to the bill itself. The reason that this bill has been introduced is because when the law was adopted in 2009, it took provisions from previous forms of debt management oversight, including a broad exemption for anyone that was licensed as an escrow agent under the Oregon Real Estate Agency. That exemption at the time was fine, but what we have found is that there are some people, unscrupulous people, who are attempting to use that license to get around the requirements that the legislature put in place to limit the fees that a debt management service provider can obtain. And so we've had one instance where one company had such a license and claimed to be exempt from our jurisdiction over that and could charge whatever fees they wanted, therefore causing some degree of additional harm to the consumer. We've talked with the OREA, the Oregon Real Estate Agency, and we've talked with the Oregon Land Title Association about this problem. They recognize that this is something that any legitimate licensee would not want to do. So what we propose to do in this bill is to limit this exemption to an exemption that allows for traditional escrow activity, that kind of activity that you think of when you think of a collection escrow or a real estate escrow. The bill is presented today does not define it quite as tightly as we think it needs to be. We think it should be fine-tuned a little bit more, and with talking with Ms. Adamson's clients and the real estate agency, we believe we can fine-tune it to the point where we need to have it when we take this over to the Senate. We think this is a good concept. This continues to protect consumers from people who want to use a loophole in the law, and if we can get there in terms of getting it through the House and then over to the Senate, we think we can get it to the place where all parties are in agreement that consumers are protected and yet escrow agents are allowed to do what they historically have been able, what historically they're supposed to have done. With that, I'll stop here unless there's a questions and just give it back to the chair and the dais.
Ms. Adamson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Jessica Adamson here today on behalf of the Oregon Land Title Association. We want to thank the department and the chair for the opportunity to weigh in on this bill and to work closely with the department to try and find a solution to the problem that Mr. Tappan has identified, and something that, as he stated so correctly, no legitimate escrow company really wants to be associated with that kind of activity and that kind of behavior towards consumers. There are legitimate activities around the area of debt escrow, collection escrow, and real estate escrow that we do operate in that sphere. We don't want a narrow exemption for them for the legitimate work that we do to in any way be used as a loophole for debt settlement companies to come in and to harm consumers. So we are happy to work with them to find a solution in this legislation that will allow for the kind of consumer protection that's intended here. There are needed amendments. We support the concept of getting this over to the Senate and making those adjustments there, and appreciate both the commitment on the part of the chair as well as the department to work with us to do that once we get to the Senate side, recognizing the lateness of the hour here in the House. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Representative Thatcher.
I just want to clarify what is happening. These fees that are being charged by some of these companies, are they being disclosed up front? Are they not being disclosed up front? Or is that not the issue at all?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thatcher, the fees may be in the contract. They may not. Oftentimes what we find happens is someone will enter into a situation where what's known as an ACH, an authorized debiting from an account, continues to happen even after a consumer feels like those fees have been, they've exceeded what they agreed to. And so sometimes they're disclosed, sometimes they aren't. However, in Oregon, the law says you can only collect a certain amount of fees up front, and then at the back end, when you've done the services you agreed to provide, then you get the bulk of your fees. They're taking all their money up front, and as I mentioned, in too many instances, when the whole thing crashes, they've got more money than any of the creditors, and certainly the consumer.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Richardson.
Just to comment, as we were talking about this, I went back over some recent figures that I've seen, and the need. We're not out of this recession. In January, in Oregon, we had 766 foreclosures, judicial 104 by add and sale. In February, it was 1,282. And in March, it was 1,598. So those are your foreclosures, and the advertisement sales have stayed fairly flat around 100, and so it's not like it's going like this. We are having an ongoing problem with people that that need to be, we need to make sure that we watch out for them and make sure that we don't have an abuse of technical law.
Thank you. I do appreciate that the work of our agencies to uncover some of these workarounds to our laws, and you know, it seems like a constant a battle to try to provide a marketplace that's legit and free, and you know, doesn't take advantage of people as well. So I really appreciate both your work on and helping get this one through. And I realize it came very late too, but I was glad we were able to sneak it in here and take some action on this. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3489. I'm going to stand at ease for just a moment. Session on House Bill 3489. Oh, come back to order first. You're getting ahead of Samantha there. Sorry. We'd like to close the public hearing on House Bill 3489, open a work session on House Bill 3489.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3489 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Lively moves House Bill 3489 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Representative Thatcher.
I support the concept, and I hope to support it when it comes back from the Senate, amended properly, and vote for the concurrence on the floor.
Thank you. Other discussion? Seeing none, Samantha, can we have a vote?
Representative Peterson?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
No.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
You're good.
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative
Doherty?
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Lively?
Aye.
Chair Holdy?
Aye.
House Bill
3489, having received the votes, is moved to the floor. And I will carry that bill. Close the work session on House Bill 3489. I'm going to reconvene the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency, and we're going to open a public hearing on HJM 12. Bob, give us a brief description of HJM 12.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, House Joint Memorial 12 requests Congress and the Federal Communications Commission to support and protect right-of-way management and compensation authority of local governments. The committee does not have amendments before it on this measure. There is no revenue impact, and I believe we have a fiscal statement issued, Mr. Chair. Let me check on that, please.
While you're doing that, this is a public hearing. And I have Craig Honeyman and Elizabeth Howe to speak. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And sort of skipped over this one. I probably made you nervous there for a while.
Not a bit.
Introduce yourself for the record, please.
Sure. My name is Craig Honeyman, Legislative Director for the League of Oregon Cities. We represent all 242 cities in the state. And I'm here to testify in support of HJM 12. At the City of Springfield's request, I have asking to be introduced into the record a letter that they'd like to submit. Unfortunately, they couldn't be here today. I'd also like to thank Representative Barnhart and Vice Chair Lively and Representative Vega Peterson for bringing this bill before this committee today. As I said, we're here to support this legislation, this joint memorial. It sends an important message, we feel, to Congress and the Federal Communications Commission that cities in Oregon have an important obligation to manage and collect compensation for the private use of a public resource, the right-of-way. Right-of-way are public assets entrusted to cities, and that's been documented in the Federal Telecommunications Act of 1996, Home Rule Protection in the in Oregon Statute, and in the Oregon Constitution, as well as through local codes. In 2011, the FCC initiated a notice of inquiry due to assertions that cities under management of the created a barrier to through their management of the right-of-way to deployment of broadband throughout the nation. By the way, this notice continues to pend before the FCC following a comment and response period. The League and several cities joined the League have filed comments endeavoring to show that cities indeed are not a barrier to broadband deployment. In fact, cities recognize that it's an essential service to and are actively supporting broadband initiatives on several fronts. Several cities operate city-owned broadband networks or have entered into intergovernmental or public-private partnerships to provide such services to their citizens. We are also working very closely with the Oregon Broadband Advisory Council on a number of broadband deployment initiatives. This small sampling of municipal broadband strategies underscores the high priority, I think, that cities place on broadband. If the FCC were to act on its notice of inquiry, it could preempt cities from managing rights away to the benefit of the public, or it could limit telecommunication franchise fees. Franchise fees, as many of you know, often are the second largest source of general fund revenue to cities. They fund police and fire and other local government services. I submit to you that Oregon cities know best how to manage public rights away. The League submitted comments to this FCC NOI on April 11th, urging the FCC to resist efforts to adversely affect city authority. Again, we support HJM 12. It will reinforce the message to Congress that right-of-way management and compensation authority best lies with cities in the state of Oregon. I thank you for your attention and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Ms. Howe?
Thank you, Chair Holvey. Members of the committee, my name is Elizabeth Howe. I represent the City of Eugene. City of Eugene would also like to thank Representative Barnhart for hearing our concerns about this issue and introducing this bill along with other co-sponsors. Eugene supports
HGM 12 to send an important message to Congress and other federal regulatory agencies that Oregon honors local government's long-held policies and authorities about management of public rights of way. The federal review of a local public rights of way management and compensation policies represents a continuing threat to the ability of local governments to recover fair and reasonable compensation for the use of public rights of way. HGM 12 is an Oregon message that reflects our desire to encourage the FCC to partner with local governments and the industry to develop targeted voluntary programs that may increase broadband deployment. So thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Not seeing any questions. You're off the hook. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So I'll close the public hearing on HJM 12. And committee, I would like to open a work session on House Bill 2662. I'm going to make you jump around, Bob.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2662 prohibits owner neglect of vacant foreclosed residential real property, authorizes local government to impose civil penalty using a specified process, and declares an emergency and is effective on passage. The committee has before it a proposed Dash 4 amendment, which I believe Representative Frederick would like to speak to. Mr. Chair, we do have statements of no revenue impact and minimal fiscal impact for the measure with that Dash 4 amendment. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Frederick, could you introduce yourself for the record, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Lou Frederick, representative from House District 43. That's North and Northeast Portland. And that district has been hard hit by the recession. It was hit hard again by bank practices as economic distress continues to, frankly, eat away at the hardworking people in my district. I'm back again right now to speak about House Bill 2662. I call it the Good Neighbor Bill with some of the proposed amendments. I'm not going to go into the rationale behind the bill at length because we've done that already. I would just say that many of the underlying conditions that led to the need for this bill have not been changed. And so even as the need eases, it is only prudent to prepare for the possibility of those conditions returning. I want to thank Representative Richardson. He proposed the amendments before you, and I agree with them. He may be better able to discuss them in detail. But Dash 1 was drafted early in the process when we realized that the introduced bill failed to clarify that this is only about vacant properties. I believe the Dash 2 amendment is incorporated into the Dash 4. It allows local government that cures a nuisance by contracting with a provider to perform the work to place a lien on the property for the cost and sets out appropriate details for how that would work. Dash 4 adds additional details. I hope you will amend this bill and pass it to the House with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. And Representative Richardson, would you care to briefly describe the Dash 4 for us?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We discussed this bill before, and Representative Smith had brought up a couple of issues on as far as sideboards and so forth, and so we went back and had the amendments in Dash 4 contain some descriptions as to what reasonable costs are. I mean, the idea is, with this whole bill, is that if there is an abandoned property or a property that has been vacant and is in neglect for a long time, the neighbors can contact the city can contact the owner and say, take care of this problem. If that doesn't happen, then the municipality has the ability to come in and mow the lawns, do whatever is necessary to bring it, the property back up to the standard of the neighborhood so it's no longer in neglect. That's all we're talking about. So what are, and then they can put as a lien on the property the costs for doing that. What it says in this amendment is that the reasonable costs mean actual and demonstrable costs that are commensurate with and do not exceed the market rate for services necessary to remedy a condition of neglect, plus the actual and demonstrable costs of administering the contract. So it puts sideboards on it. It will enable neighbors to actually get some action on a piece of property so that they don't have an eyesore that hurts their whole neighborhood and attracts, the wrong element. And by the way, by doing this, it also would keep the value of the property up, which doesn't hurt the property at a sale that ultimately will take place.
Right, and I might add probably the value of the neighbors and the whole neighborhood.
That's right, and also this does not just occur after a foreclosure sale, because often these properties are sitting vacant for years before the foreclosure sale. Mm-hmm. And so this is focused on properties that are in a condition of neglect, and it's not specifically tied to whether or not a foreclosure sale has already occurred.
Questions? So, Representative Richardson, I have one that maybe I should have asked you this offline, but so after a notice of foreclosure has happened and the owner has vacated the property and the property is in neglect and the foreclosure sale has not happened, this bill would still, the cities still would be able to remedy that situation in trying to figure out who the owner is at that point.
Right. It specifically states that local government shall notify the owner in writing and that the owner would have 30 days to remedy the condition, so it doesn't allow preemptive action by the municipality. Mm-hmm.
So do you know what would happen if MERS was listed on the title as the owner?
MERS is not the owner.
Right. Correct. But they're on the.
But the lien, the cost would be. Excuse me, Chair Holvey.
Please.
Committee, the lien would be on the cost would be a lien on that particular property. Right. So it really does not matter right now who the official owner is at that particular point, because that's going to be part of the cost of the property when it is sold in any way, shape, or form.
But I guess my question was, who do you notify? And how do, if in fact MERS is on the title and you go to search?
Mr. Chair, that is one of the problems with the way the bill was originally written,
right,
because basically it said that you can attach a fine, essentially, of mm-hmm. so much a day that would just accumulate, but it didn't resolve the problem, which was
right.
trying to make
right.
stop the blight. And so by having the amendment, what it says is we try and notify the owner, but if people are not coming forward, that we were going to go ahead and solve the issue, it will then be a lien on the property, which whoever the owner is, it's in their best interest to make sure that the property is maintained, and if not, it will get maintained, and the actual cost of that maintenance will be a lien on the property.
Right. And the lien would be satisfied upon sale.
Right.
Great. Thank you for your work on that, Representative Richardson and Representative Frederick. I know it's been a long process trying to figure out how to deal with this, and I think we got a good solution.
I'm encouraged. Thank you.
So any other questions? Seeing none, we need a motion to adopt the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the -4 amendment to House Bill 2662, dated 4-4-2013.
Representative Lively moves we adopt the -4 amendments to House Bill 2662, dated 4-4-2013. I think we've had our discussion on the amendment. Any further discussion on the amendment? Is there any objection to the amendment? Seeing none, the -4s are adopted. House Bill 2662. And Representative Lively.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2662 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Lively moves House Bill 2662 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
I'll just quick comment that I think this has been fabulous work between Representative Frederick for bringing it and then members of our committee. Thank you.
Any other comments? Seeing none, Smith, can we have a vote, please?
Representative Vega Peterson?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Kinney-Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lively?
Aye.
Chair Holvey?
Aye. House Bill 2662, having received the votes, is passed, and we'll have Representative Representative Frederick, would you like to carry this bill?
I would like to carry this.
I sort of thought you might. So with that, Representative Frederick, carry the bill. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2662. And Bob, how do you feel about jumping back and opening a work session on HJM 12?
Thrilled to pieces, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Joint Memorial 12 is the measure that requests Congress and the Federal Communications Commission support and protect right-of-way management and compensation authority of local governments. We have no revenue impact and no fiscal impact on the measure as introduced, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Lively, would you like to make a motion?
Sure. Mr. Chair, I move House Joint Memorial 12 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Lively moves House Joint Memorial 12 to the floor with a due adopt recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none. Samantha, can we have a vote, please?
Representative Vega Peterson?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lively?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye.
HJM 12 having received required votes is passed or adopted. Representative Lively, would you care to carry the bill?
I'd be fine with that. Thank you.
Representative, you can fight it out with Representative Barnhart.
Barnhart, I'll talk to Representative Barnhart about it, yes.
Okay, well, let me know if that changes.
Okay.
So with that, I'll close the work session on HJM 12, and we'll stand at ease. I think we're close to the end of our day. Stand at ease. House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency back to order committee. We've finished the bills that we're going to work on today. We will be carrying over House Bill 3145, House Bill 3349, House Bill 3172, House Bill 3415, House Bill 3447, House Bill 3165, House Bill 3389, House Bill 3169, House Bill 2429, and House Bill 2826, House Bill 2536, and House Bill 3328, and And I will note, committee, that we do have three bills that are on our schedule for Wednesday, House Bill 2955, House Bill 3035, and House Bill 3116. And that meeting is at
5:30.
What was the
last one? 3116.
3116.
That's hideous.
It's at 5:30 in Hearing Room F, and I do realize we have a slight conflict with a couple of members. We're hopeful we got some public hearing to deal with, and I've heard that committee will probably be done by 6, so we probably won't be done with our public hearings by that time, and hopefully you can join us for the finish with that. And so thank you very much for your patience again and your attentiveness and good work. With that, I will adjourn the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency.